Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in 1. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Our friendship started and ended in tragedy. I met Jane when we were freshmen in high school. She was the new kid. For weeks, I noticed how she awkwardly tried to join conversations and ate lunch alone. She had such a sad aura, so I decided to befriend her. One day, I sat with her at lunch, and that was that. We didn't become best friends until the party. After a few months of casually hanging out at school, Jane and I were invited to an upperclassman party. Only a few freshmen were invited, so we felt special. We decided to go together because we didn't know anyone else who was invited. I remember how desperate we were not to blow it. What it was, I'm not sure. Popularity, maybe. We pored over what to wear for hours, and then pored more hours over how to do our hair and makeup. When we arrived, the party was already jumping. We weaved our way through the crowd to reach the keg. There we met Steve, a gentle-looking upperclassman. He took to Jane right away. When he looked away, Jane looked over to me and mouthed, "OMG." I winked at her and gave them space to get to know each other. I fell into another crowd, passing around a joint. I didn't know how much time had passed when I realized I didn't know where Jane was. I scanned the room and she was nowhere to be seen. I got up and started looking for her. She was nowhere on the main level. I grew more nervous each passing second that I couldn't see her. It didn't seem like her to hook up with the guy, but I had only known her for a few months, or so I told myself to manage my anxiety. I made my way upstairs and started knocking and opening doors. When I reached the door at the end of the hall, I heard grunting. I knocked. No answer. I opened the door to see Steve on top of Jane, who was passed out. I yelled at him to get off. His head whipped around to face me, and he got off Jane. "It's not what it looks like," he stammered. "Sure it isn't," I scoffed. I pushed him to the side to check on Jane. He must have slipped or something, because she was barely responsive. I took one of her arms around my shoulders and lifted her up. We left. Jane pressed charges, and Steve was sent to juvie. Considering what happened later, I'm not sure Jane ever recovered from that trauma. Rather, she latched onto me because after that, we were inseparable. In her eyes, I was her savior and protector. I think she felt like she needed me, which is why she went nuts when she started to lose me. We did everything together. Jane felt safe with me, and I did what I could to protect her, which usually looked like defending her when she had trauma triggers during the school day. When the time came to apply for colleges, Jane applied to all the same colleges as me. I suggested she look into some outside my selection, but she refused. She told me she wanted to go to college with me. At this point, I was excited to expand my horizons, but I couldn't tell her no. We got into the same college, and Jane talked about living together and how we would decorate our dorm without a formal discussion. I just went along with it. I figured I already knew her and she was clean. I talked to my mom about how I was scared I might feel suffocated, and she assured me that we would probably fall into different social circles due to our polar opposite majors. I had plans to attend med school, and Jane liked the idea of being a teacher. Honestly, in the beginning, it was great. It was nice to have a buddy as I navigated the first few weeks. Problems arose when I made plans without her. It wasn't even a fun hangout. We were studying, and she got so angry for no reason. She didn't talk to me for 2 days after that. Her silent treatment was so icy that I had to confront her about it. She told me she felt like I was intentionally leaving her out and leaving her behind for my new friends. I assured her that was not the case. They were my friends, and I was going to hang out with them, but I had no intention of leaving her behind. I asked if she had made any new friends, and she shook her head. I encouraged her to put herself out there to make new friends, and she said, "But I have you. I don't need anyone else." "Maybe you don't need anyone else, but you still might find new people you can have fun with. I can be friends with your friends." It was like something wasn't computing for her, so I shrugged and said, "Okay." Jane didn't gel with my new friends very well, to the point that they asked me not to bring her along. I listened to them. After I stopped inviting her to everything, I noticed Jane's style changed. She went from her usual preppy look to a more alt-goth look, which is how I dressed. She borrowed my clothes without asking. On multiple occasions, she copied entire outfits of mine. I got my nose pierced, Jane got her nose pierced. I dyed my hair, she dyed her hair the same color. I started doing my makeup a certain way, and so did she. Soon enough, I couldn't give her the benefit of the doubt. Jane was definitely copying me. It started getting weird when I overheard Jane talking to someone. She told them one of my stories like it had happened to her, even taking my experiences and passing them off as her own. Once I walked in on her sleeping in my bed. I wasn't entirely sure what was happening, but it was like she was trying to be me in every way. She even changed her major to pre-med, but she always hated the STEM subjects. The tipping point was when I started having a fling with this guy. We planned to have lunch with Jane. When I walked up to the table, Jane was all over him. She had her arm around his and was batting her eyelashes at him. Meanwhile, he was visibly uncomfortable. I confronted her afterward, and she acted like nothing had happened. I couldn't deal with it anymore, so I filed for a room change. We got into a heated argument. I called her out for copying me, and she played dumb. I told her she was suffocating me, and she started crying hysterically. The night after our argument, I went to bed before she got home. I didn't want to sleep with her anymore. I snuggled up in my blankets and drifted off into a peaceful sleep. At some point during the night, I woke up to a sharp pain on the side of my face. Something was pinning me down, and I couldn't move. I opened my eyes, and Jane was on top of me with a wild look in her eye. She had a small knife in one hand. "What are you doing?" I yelled. "Get off of me." She didn't budge, but moved the knife closer to my face. "Stop!" I shrieked. I shook my arms loose from her body and pushed her off. "What the hell are you doing?" After I pushed her off, she didn't fight me. Instead, she froze and stared at me like a deer in headlights. "Seriously, what are you doing? Drop the knife." She didn't drop the knife. Instead, she started to crouch. After a few seconds, she pounced on me. She kept trying to slash my face, but I was able to hold her off. I started yelling for help, and like a zombie, Jane continued her mission. Finally, someone else came into the room and pulled Jane off me. The cops came and took her in for questioning. Jane told them she was trying to steal my face. She needed it to feel safe. I charged her with harassment because she scarred me for life. She pled insanity and is now in a mental facility somewhere. I really hope she's getting the help she needs, but I also hope she stays far, far away from me. Matthew and I had been best friends for years. We started off as college buddies and kept in touch through the next several grueling years of graduating and entering the work industry. I thought I had known everything there was to know about him. He was a fairly regular guy, the kind that you probably wouldn't bother sparing a second glance when passing him on the street. Average height, average looks, average personality. But somehow, we got along pretty well and managed to stay friends over the years. We used to go out fairly regularly for drinks too, but after a while, he started blowing me off with more frequency. I thought that perhaps he'd lost interest in me as a friend, or simply didn't feel like going, but whenever I called to invite him to the pub, he'd sound irritated, like I'd bothered him in the midst of something important. It didn't concern me at first, but after a while, it grew pretty tedious. If he didn't want to hang out with me anymore, I'd rather he just tell me that outright. I thought we were best friends after all, and there was no point keeping up a pretense if it wasn't real anymore. It was a Friday evening, and I just knocked off work, feeling like I needed to wash away my tiredness with a drink or two. Like always, I dialed Matthew's number while getting off the bus, intending to invite him out. Even if it was likely he'd refuse, I'd hated not offering him the choice, and maybe it would give me an opportunity to ask what was going on with him lately. He answered after the fourth ring, his voice low and gruff and slightly breathless. "Yeah. Hey Matt, it's Jack. I'm just heading up to the pub on Brook Street. Want to join me?" I heard movements on the other end of the phone, a faint thud like something falling. "Sorry man, not tonight," he said. "Okay," I said quietly, listening to the background noise on the other end of the line. I could hear wind whistling and something dripping. Where was he? "Is everything okay?" "Yeah, man. Why wouldn't it be?" he said sharply, almost aggressively, like I asked something I shouldn't have. "Look, I really gotta get going." Beneath the sound of his words, I thought I heard something else. A faint cry, or perhaps a whimper followed by another thump. "Yeah, okay." He hung up before I could finish speaking, the call going dead in my ear. What was all that about? And what were those sounds I'd heard? He definitely wasn't in his apartment, I could tell that much. He hadn't sounded like he was alone either, but I couldn't be sure. He didn't have a girlfriend or anything, but I suppose he could have hooked up with someone. It just all seemed rather odd, and something was itching the back of my mind, a feeling that something was wrong. The tone of his voice, the noises in the background, the urgency to get me off the phone. What did it all mean? I pulled up my phone and opened the Snapchat app. I barely used it these days, but I knew it had a map function that allowed you to view your friend's location. Maybe it was being a bit creepy, but I was worried about Matthew and wanted to make sure he wasn't in any kind of trouble. When the map finally loaded, it pinpointed Matt at a location a couple of blocks from his apartment. If I was thinking of the right location, it was an old industrial park that was nothing but a bunch of abandoned warehouses now. What was he doing out there? The industrial park was about a 20-minute walk from where I was, so I turned my back on the pub and started walking the other way. If Matt was in some kind of trouble, it was up to his best friend to help him, right? Still, it was weird he hadn't mentioned anything to me. I would have been none the wiser if not for his strange and aloof behavior these past few weeks. I walked quickly and reached the cluster of the warehouse just over 15 minutes later. When I checked the map again, Matt was still in the area, though it didn't give me any more specific details. He could have been anywhere inside the old industrial park. It was well past dusk now, and the sound of traffic had faded in the distance. I shivered as a wind picked up, whistling through the old abandoned buildings. I started walking around between the warehouses, trying to look for any sign of Matthew, but I couldn't see him. Maybe the map function was faulty and wasn't tracking his location properly. I was probably worrying about nothing anyway. A faint scream made me freeze, the hair on my neck standing on end. What was that? An animal? Or a person? I stood and listened in silence, holding my breath. Again, another muffled cry, coming from inside one of the nearby buildings. Was someone in danger? The muffled scream sounded female, but it was hard to tell as it echoed, distorted around the warehouse. Pulling my phone out, I typed in 911 and paused before I hit dial. I wanted to make sure there was actually someone in trouble before I called the police. It might have simply been some kids messing around, but somehow, I doubted it. I entered their warehouse through the broken doorway, rotten pieces of cardboard barely hanging from the hinges. It was dark, but I didn't want to risk turning on my phone's light in case it gave away my presence. I squinted.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Peering through the gloom as I picked my way through the dusty building. Somewhere ahead of me, I could hear the sound of whimpering, like someone scared or in pain. Shut the hell up before I silence you for good. A voice snarled through the dark, making me shudder. Nobody's coming to help, so you might as well keep quiet. The cries fell silent, and I picked out two silhouettes in the dark ahead of me. One lying prone on the ground, another standing over them. The second figure crouched down, and as my eyes adjusted, I glimpsed a knife glistening with blood. I let out a soft, involuntary gasp, my fingers trembling as I gripped my phone. The silver of breath echoed through the silence, and the figure in front of me suddenly turned around. My heart plummeted down into my stomach, the ground rocking beneath my feet. Matthew stood in front of me, clutching the bloody knife. I recognized his sharp jaw, but his eyes, dark full of bloodlust, belonged to a stranger. He was almost unrecognizable like this. Blood smeared his cheek, a strange smile tugging at his lips. When his gaze fell on me, the smile disappeared. Surprise crossed his features. Jack? He half gasped, half whimpered. What are you doing here? I swallowed, my throat feeling bone dry. The words wouldn't come out, my tongue curling around silence. The surprise disappeared, replaced with a hard, cold certainty. You shouldn't be here. What are you doing? What is this? I finally blurted, my gaze flickering behind him to the young woman on the ground, her hands bound with rope, blood dripping down her face and neck. A nasty cut was gouged into her cheek. You shouldn't be here, Matthew repeated, his voice getting more panicked. What the hell are you doing here? I was worried about you, I managed to gasp out, taking a trembling step backwards. You've been acting strange, and I was worried. Matthew shook his head, the knife tightening in his hand. You should have stayed away. I took another step back, and he followed, shuffling forward. In the darkness, with the blood on his face and that mad gleam in his eye, he looked like a stranger, a murderous stranger, no longer my best friend. Matt, you really, really shouldn't have come. I recognized the warning in his voice, and the second he made his move, lunging towards me with the knife. I turned and ran, tripping over debris in the darkness of the warehouse and stumbling out into the night. I'd already hit dial on the phone and spoke in sharp, gasping pants as the call connected. Please, you have to help me, he has a knife! I blurted, sweat dripping in my face as I fled. There's a girl, she's been hurt, Where are you? Can you give me an address? I told her the name of the area based off the map I'd used to track Matthew, begging her to hurry. I could hear Matthew running behind me. He stopped chasing me as soon as I hit the main road. Cars trundled back and forth, the pavement busy with pedestrians hitting the pub on a Friday night. There's no way he would risk attacking me here in such a crowded place. Before long, the police finally showed up, and I showed them to the warehouse where Matt had been. The girl was still there, alive but bleeding. But Matthew, the man I had once called my best friend, was nowhere to be seen. The girl, whose name I learned was Emily, was the daughter of a wealthy businessman who had been embezzling millions from the company Matthew worked for. When the discrepancies were discovered, Matthew, a low-level accountant, was framed as the scapegoat. Fueled by a desperate need to clear his name and protect his future, he took Emily hostage, hoping to use her as leverage to make her father confess. The night I stumbled upon the scene, Matthew was on the verge of breaking Emily and doing unspeakable things, his initial resolve hardening into something monstrous. My unexpected arrival threw a wrench into his plan, forcing him to flee, leaving Emily bound and injured, but alive. The police investigation that followed was a media frenzy. I was hailed as a hero for rescuing Emily, but the guilt of what I had witnessed and the chilling realization of the monster Matthew had become gnawed at me relentlessly. Emily eventually recovered from her physical injuries, but the trauma of her ordeal left her deeply scarred. As for me, I was left grappling with the shattered remains of my friendship, forever haunted by the memory of the bloodthirsty stranger Matthew had become. A chilling reminder of the darkness that can lurk beneath the surface of even the most ordinary people.
My name is Brandon Wilson, and I'm 42 years old. I work as a private security guard. In a recent past, I was hired by the administration of a gym to keep an eye on things during the night. I was supposed to stay inside and pretty much make sure that nothing or no one strange entered or did anything or serious shit happened. The gym was only open during the daytime. The thing is, the town where this particular gym was located was experiencing a series of violent crimes. People were being killed, that too, in a quite gruesome manner. Sometimes in the streets, and other times inside their homes when they were alone. So the gym owners decided to hire me in order to keep everything safe. They didn't want any unwanted incident that would hurt their reputation. The gym owners were boomers in the purest sense. They didn't believe in CCTVs or other late safety tech. They wanted real men, men of steel and flesh and blood. So, until that criminal spread was over, I was in for some extra money as the gym's security guard. But I wasn't doing it alone. Two other men, a couple of friends cum colleagues from the same private security company where I work, were going to be there with me as part of a team. Tim, 33 years old, and Janice, yes, a woman, she was 28. 1 week passed, and we had nothing to report. Everything was calm. It was a Monday night. Well, already 3 a.m., and me and my friends were, precisely, at the gym. After once again checking out every single division of that place, we simply sat down to wait for our shift to come to an end. While playing cards, of course. "This is what I call easy money," I said. "What do you mean? You're losing the card game," Tim answered. "I mean the job at the gym. Easy peasy. Why would a criminal enter an empty gym at night? The owners are crazy," I replied. "Yep, let's hope it stays that way. But those crimes, they're really violent. I have a friend at the police department. He said that some details are being kept top secret. Like, it seems that some parts of the dead bodies, like bones and skulls, are being taken by the criminal, or criminals, as if they were trophies. That's insane," Janice said. "There's a lot of sick people out there. I've been in this line of work for a decade. At this point, I don't think anything could surprise me anymore," I said. "I know, right? Well, I gotta go to the ladies' room. $10 again, next game?" "You're on, Janice. Go on, do your thing," Tim said as Janice went to the bathroom. 20 minutes passed, but Janice was still in the bathroom. Sometimes we need our time to be longer, if you know what I mean. But still, Tim decided to go check on her. A few moments later, Tim was shouting, "Brandon! Brandon! Come here quick! Holy sh—" I ran as fast as I could, and I saw Janice's dead body. Not inside, in the bathroom, but right outside. It was hanging from the ceiling. Her neck had been slit, and the blood was dripping from that wound, falling on the floor slowly. It resembled some kind of sick ritual.
Who the hell did this? Takes the time to do such a thing, and how was this done? I said, trying to figure out what was holding Janice's body. It was some kind of weird substance, like glue, but it burned my skin. I couldn't touch it for too long or else I'd get injured. This is weird. Hey, Tim, check this out. Tim? I called my friend only to realize that he wasn't there anymore. He was always very spontaneous, for good and bad. And seeing Janice dead, especially like that, made him angry. I assumed he went to try to find the murderer on his own. That was a terrible idea. I was moving slowly and carefully, being the pragmatic person of the group and more experienced than most of them. At that point, I wasn't even calling my friend because I knew my voice could attract unwanted attention. Some seconds passed, but I couldn't hear Tim. Or anything, for that matter. Eventually, I heard something. It came from a room down the hall. It was a small room where the gym staff kept some machines and devices that had been replaced and weren't useful anymore. Slowly, I approached the room. The door was closed. I could listen to a constant noise, like someone was hitting a nail with a hammer. Immediately, I opened the door. Holy what are you? I said, when I saw someone whose shape was the same as any average man, but whose features I could barely distinguish, especially using my flashlight only. It was like a pure and black shadow, but completely materialized. Nevertheless, even more intense than that entity's appearance was the sense of pure and cold evil that I was capturing from it. I felt like a little boy, completely hopeless and terrified. And that shadow man was tearing my friend Tim to pieces. The dark figure appeared to be using his own shapeless hands, who apparently were as sharp as blades. I started to shoot the creature, unloading every bullet that I had on it. The entity did seem to be wounded, or at least hurt by those shots. 9mm caliber is no funhouse, especially at such short distance. The Shadow Man sent a shivering scream, both of pain and anger. I had no more bullets, but I got to hit him a couple times on his face. Well, at least where his face was supposed to be, if he had one, within all that hellish blackness. He dropped my friend, and when I thought the entity itself was going to fall, something else happened. The creature mumbled a few words, and some kind of black vortex appeared right in front of it. Then, the Shadow Man simply went through it, and he was gone. The vortex was closed and disappeared immediately, right after the entity passed. I think there's no other explanation than this one. We were dealing with an entity who dwells in a dark, parallel dimension. Since the dawn of time, these shadow people have been identified by several cultures throughout the world and have been given different names. They're described and feared as evil parasites. Obviously, these creatures at times are able to come into our universe and do their thing. How and how often does this happen? And do they have different, more complex, wicked plans? Are there shadow people among us, disguised perhaps? These are questions that I can't answer, for now. In any case, I called the authorities and told them the truth about what happened. A couple of weeks later, I was actually contacted by the cops. They were very interested in listening to the complete details of my story, especially about that dark humanoid entity and how it used a vortex. They were very nice and thankful for my cooperation, although they did say the following. We strongly advise you not to share this story with anyone, much less in public. They would consider you a madman.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.